Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
92.9 Podcasts powered by Action 24/7. Tennessee's only local legal sportsbook. Bet now at Action247.com. Now, 92.9 FM ESPN presents Memphis's biggest sports columnist.
You ain't got to do nothing, homeboy. You ain't writing nothing. No, you ain't. I ain't letting him write. He ain't getting no interviews.
It's the award-winning Jeff Calkins from the Daily Memphian and the Jeff Calkins Show.
I don't get no interviews. I know. I'm good.
On 92.9 FM ESPN.
Gentlemen, this is something they call a groundbreaker. So let me first apologize to the shirts and the ties for your makeup. 'Cause I'll make you ugly as soon as it drops. We're on a rampage, bubbles popping up before you know it. There's rubble and dust 'cause we'll be pushing it up. Somebody say you better.
Everybody, happy Friday.
Ladies and gentlemen.
So, Jeffrey, do you wish game three were tonight? We've discussed the timing of this, and I've been grateful for a break. But are we ready now? Do we wish it were tonight? Tonight had been the right night?
So, my answer to that question is, will 24 hours help Desmond Bane's back? I got eyes on the prize.
I think that's right. Okay, but emotionally, if you could snap your fingers and know that he would be in good health tonight, are you ready for it? And there's been a lot of there's been a lot of back and forth, right?
Yes, there certainly has been on that. I think if you could have chosen the schedule, you would have chosen the schedule that the Suns and Mavericks are on, where they had the extra day early in the series before the series started. And now the Grizzlies get the extra day, so I would have preferred that. But I don't really have a huge...
I don't mind.
It would make it easier for me to watch.
Game three is tomorrow. And today on the radio show, we'll of course, be talking about that. Jason Smith's going to come in here and talk to us in the next segment about all of this. Chris Harrington is going to join us. He is bound for San Francisco. And we're going to try to get him at the airport before he takes off for San Francisco, and then we will talk to you. That is the lineup. Jason Smith, then Chris Harrington, and then you as we continue to marinate in this fantastic, and it is fantastic, series. So the news yesterday, a lot of news yesterday, you may have heard. Andre Iguodala out.
What?
Yeah. Andre Iguodala.
Coach Iguodala.
Out.
He's added a new title.
Out. So he is out. So he will not be stopping Ja.
Uh-huh.
Draymond Green fined $25,000. But here's the thing, and you don't know this, Jeffrey. Mm-hmm. He makes $25 million a year.
Yes, I've heard. He told me.
I think he should have gotten $50,000.
I said of all the news yesterday.
Did Kyrie get 50?
Yes, I think Kyrie's problem, though, was
the same double bird.
Yeah, but
Kyrie did the double bird.
But he was doing it throughout the game. I think the fact that it was just that it was
one double bird.
Yes. I honestly
said 12.5 for a bird?
Yeah, it's apparently that's the market rate.
Wouldn't it be nice to be able to be rich enough to be fined $25,000 and to be able to shrug it off as nothing?
Well, I also think it would be nice to be fined $25,000 and have most people go, that's it?
And that would be nice, too. Right now, if you were fined, Jeffrey, if the FCC came by and fined you $25,000, how would that go over in the right household?
Let's see. How would that conversation go?
Honey, we've been fined $25,000.
So we still haven't done a lot with the money she made selling her house.
Oh, that's good.
So we could technically cover it.
Yep.
I don't know if I'd ever recover, though. I think I'd officially be in the doghouse.
Quite a hole for most people.
Correct.
Speaking of which, by the way, did you see the Phil Mickelson news?
Yes. Speaking of quite the hole, Stig.
So Phil, little dog leg here for just a minute, to use a golf term. The new book that's coming out about Phil Mickelson.
From Alan Shipnuck, yes.
From Alan Shipnuck, right? Yeah, Alan Shipnuck. And they know this because the feds.
Correct.
The feds, he was part of this case, and so the feds looked into it. He had, between 2010 and 2014, $40 million.
Yes.
In gambling losses from 2010 to 2014. At the time, his annual income was estimated to be $48 million a year. Still, if you're...
No, I mean, Shipnuck laid it out. If you did the math, let's say that Alan, I think, was using like $45 million at the tax rate that he was. Basically, you could say, okay, he's down to roughly $24 million, maybe a little less. Then you considered travel expenses. He had the G4 or the G5 maybe, the plane. And basically what he was saying is if you divvy it out, he was basically taking home $10 million a year. That's apparently what he was gambling, and he would basically lose it every year. He was basically breaking even.
It is amazing. And by the way, like we do these spots for FanDuel and everything else. And at the end, we always say, gambling problem, call Tennessee,
Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789.
1-800-889-9789.
Mm-hmm.
And we mean it. Like,
yes.
If you can do this, Jeffrey does it for fun.
Yes.
Right? John does it for fun. If you are doing it such that it is doing to you the local equivalent of what Phil, the smaller
correct
bore equivalent of what it was doing to Phil Mickelson, call Tennessee Redline, 1-800-889-9789. It's insane. He is a smart guy. You would think at some point, like, he's sort of arrogant, too. Like,
yeah,
you would imagine he would be.
He is smart, but he is also not nearly as smart as he thinks he is.
Well, no. Yeah, but holy crap.
Well, and for the record,
$40 million.
Part of the reason why I've never, obviously, coming from the world of gambling, I understand where it can go. So the reason, though, I've never had a moral problem in promoting a gambling enterprise, these enterprises, you have to have the money. Where you end up losing this kind of money is when you tell a guy, like, all right, we're playing $250,000 a hole, and then you have to settle up at the end. Like, that's a very, betting on credit is a very different thing.
Right.
Because clearly you're betting.
And by the way, so you wonder why he's going to this new tour. Well, you don't really.
Yes.
He is being paid $30 million up front to play in the new Saudi Arabian back tour, right?
His sign on fee is reported to be $30 million. I think the bigger reason is forget that up front.
It's a $20 million payday or something?
Each tournament's going to basically be a massive payday. But what I think he's really doing is he's trying to go over to Saudi Arabia and get into the golf building business.
Okay. Anyway, enough of that. We know that Draymond Green was fined $25,000. That's how we got into that. And then we learned that Dylan Brooks, as pretty much all of us predicted, would be suspended for game three, a single game. And then, really interesting moment yesterday at practice, because Taylor Jenkins was asked about the Brooks suspension, and he said, you know, we'll honor it. I mean, he's not Penny Hardaway, for God's sakes. He said, we'll honor it. We're going to, we respect the league.
Stop disrespecting me, bro.
We respect the league's decision and all of that. But then he made a point of saying this idea that there's a narrative out there that we're a dirty team. And he gets fired. He was getting fired up. We are the furthest thing from a dirty team, blah, 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 blah. Well, I'm like, I sort of heard this and I thought to myself, is there a narrative out there or did Steve Kerr say it? And so
Are those mutually exclusive?
I raised my hand, but narrative is a little, I raised my hand. I didn't raise my hand. I said specifically, I said, you said narrative. Steve Kerr is the one who used the term dirty. Do you object to Steve Kerr's comments? And he said, I said what I said. So there we have it. Steve Kerr then, by the way, doubled down by continuing to drone on about Dylan Brooks, which I thought, if in the heat of the moment you're mad and whatever and you're defending your player, mm-hmm. that is one thing. To continue to bring it up at this point strikes me as overkill when you coach Draymond Green. Particularly, and have never. I went back, I looked as hard as I could last night for any comment that he had ever had criticizing the behavior of Draymond Green, including, by the way, the fact that they once themselves had an incident
yes.
where the police nearly had to be called because they blew up each other to such an extent. But he has never, as far as I can tell, called out Draymond Green. He continues to repeatedly call out Dylan Brooks. As I also said, I have no problem. We will take your calls on this and everything else later on in the show. I have no problem with Draymond Green not being suspended for the Brandon Clark flagrant 2 and Dylan being suspended for his flagrant 2. And the fact that Gary Payton got hurt and Brandon Clark did not absolutely influenced the decision.
They stated it in the press release.
And should have. People talk about it like it's illogical that the consequences had any impact on the punishment. It's not illogical. Of course they did. If I push you, as I said in my column today, if I push you over and you hit your head on a table and die, I will be punished differently than if I push you, you stumble back, fall down, get up, and walk away. The push is exactly the same. I have done the same thing, flagrant 2. But the consequences will shape what happens to me, as they should. So you can argue back and forth, and I've heard arguments. I'll be honest. The common man watching Draymond's foul and seeing him get tossed, he's getting tossed for that? This is just true.
Yeah.
Around the country, the common man said, wow, he's getting tossed for that? The common man, the everyman, who has no connection to Golden State or Memphis,
right.
when they watched the Dylan Brooks play, they said, he's getting tossed for that.
Right.
So even on its face, one looked more violent, certainly, than the other. But we can argue about whether one was worse than the other. They both were deemed to be flagrant twos. The difference was not that Draymond tried to catch Brandon Clark. That had nothing to do with it. The difference was, at the end, Brandon Clark got up and was fine. Gary Payton has a broken elbow. That's the difference.
Yeah.
And I got no problem with it being the difference. Of course it's the difference.
No, I mean, I said this yesterday, and it still holds true. The issue that I was facing yesterday is because essentially everything happened the way I expected it to happen from from Dylan getting tossed in the game to a one-game suspension, it leaves me in this place of
seems fine. Let's play the game.
Yeah. Like I don't have some grand take.
Is the fact that we are talking about this and that we are talking about Taylor Jenkins's comments and that we are talking about Steve Kerr's droning on, is that delicious or is it unfortunate because it's distracting from a great series? Is it fun or is it unfortunate?
I think it's net fun. I think one of the things that we're starting to remember is these playoff series, A, they're long and there's a little bit of time in between these games. And so that allows for just this analysis paralysis. And like we're in the midst of it.
Right. It also, one of the things we're reminded of is that you grow to hate these people.
unlike some heroes out there, this hero did not have to be reminded.
Right. But no, I don't mean these people.
No, exactly. I mean,
whoever you play in a series, you grow to hate. And it's honestly one of the ways in which, like, I love the NFL. Probably above, I don't know, I really like the NHL too. By the way, thoughts and prayers to Preds fans out there as they lose in overtime to the Avalanche. Game they had to win.
Yeah.
But
they'll bounce back.
They won't bounce back. The Preds, and I don't mean this in any disrespect, they were overwhelming underdogs to go into this series. The fact I honestly, and I rarely say this about anything from Nashville, I wanted them to win last night just because it would have made for a more interesting
series.
There's
still plenty of other good series out there.
There are other good series out there. But when you play in the NFL, you've got one game, and that's it. And you might hate them at the end of that game, but you don't then play them again, right? Like here, you are reminded why you hate Draymond Green, and then you see him again and again and again, and it is why all of that Grizzlies Clippers stuff became so vivid.
Yes,
is because it was all built on itself, and that's what's happening now, and so there's real animosity building up in this series. Including on social media, where a phenomenon has emerged, and it really is new. Grizzlies have been in the playoffs a lot, really. Social media has been around for a while, really. And yet I have never seen as many Grizzly fans, followers, people who are active on social media appalled by the comments and the virulence, the crass attacks of the Warriors fans. Just for example, Joe Mullinax, of course, who does the Grizzly Bear Blues, Joe Mullinax got a text from someone.
DM.
A DM from someone who, was it a DM or,
who DM.
Said, this is the comment from a Warriors fan. Living in Memphis and have a Down syndrome kid. Double whammy. Oh, and I forgot, bald.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Joe Mullinax is just talking about the series.
Yes.
Right? And he gets a message, living in Memphis and have a Down syndrome kid. Double whammy. Oh, I forgot, bald. Now, weirdly enough, Joe Mullinax does not live in Memphis
anymore.
And,
yes.
And anymore. And it does not appear that he has a Down syndrome kid. He is pretty bald.
Yes.
Does seem to be bald. But that is the level of, and that's just one small example. Rob Fisher has commented on it. Others have commented on it that they are being inundated with toxic messages from Warriors fans. And in a way that's just striking. Like there was just an emotional series with Minnesota. And this was not a theme. And again, you hate to generalize based on social media is a toxic place. It can be. And what percentage of Warriors fans are even on Twitter? Well, a higher percentage than of any other fan base, probably. But because it's Silicon Valley.
They have one of the largest
fan bases
in terms of online fan bases.
Yeah. And then there have been last year there was a play-in against the Warriors last year. There was a little bit of what is this phenomenon? It is happening, isn't it? And Memphis fans are just kind of rocked and appalled by it. Like what the hell is happening here? How did this become you've heard women complain that they've been, mm-hmm. Said they've been threatened and, with rape and whatever else. Like it's just bizarrely toxic. Is this something you have observed, is it not?
Oh yeah, but I guess it's much like my reaction to the Dylan Brooks suspension. Welcome to the internet.
But we didn't see it last year. They played them last year. We didn't see it last year.
We didn't
see it against Minnesota, also on the internet. They got it up there.
First off, with Minnesota, I made this comment early in the series. Minnesota was just discovering NBA Twitter. Like, you could tell, you're new here. Like, you don't know how to do this. And Golden State, they invented the game. This is, they live in this. They're on top of...
They've been the best team for a long time, and so that builds a giant fan base.
During the social media era.
And they have been, and they are particularly plugged in and wired. I don't know if you've ever heard of Silicon Valley.
They're an incredibly online crew.
But they're supposed to be, San Franciscans are supposed to be a nice, progressive, wine-drinking group, not a threatening you and talking about mythical Down syndrome kid.
That's branding. That's not reality.
It's actually, and the truth of the matter is, it is such a small percentage of Warrior fans who are acting like this. It is. It is.
No,
right?
It is, but they obviously have a bigger pool.
Yes, they have a bigger pool. And they have Jordan Poole.
Yes.
All of that. Anyway, it's really gotten kind of wild this early in the series, and it's only going to amp up from here, because game three... with the built-up tension and animosity, will be absolutely deafening. And then game four, when you've got the return of Dylan Brooks.
In San Francisco,
holy crap, that will be something else. And so buckle up, because it is going to be bitterly contested series. Right now, the Warriors are 6.5-point favorites. Is that right, Jeffrey?
I'm seeing 7 right now.
Now, so it's gone to 7.
Yeah.
It went, when Dylan Brooks was suspended, it went from 6 to 6.5, is what I believe. It did move the line.
It moved. It was also unclear, though, to me, if it was moving because of the suspension or it was moving because just that the number
That's
of people
the
that
money,
were betting
right.
on the were pe- betting on the Warriors.
Well, here's the other thing. You can slice this series any way you like. If you want, you can say, listen, Grizzlies won game two, and they should have won game one. They had every opportunity to win game one. They should be up 2-0. Steph and Clay, particularly Clay, look cooked, honestly. They got no answer for Ja Morant. They only had a theoretical answer to begin with in Gary Payton and Andre Iguodala, and they don't have either of those guys. They can't stop Ja. Memphis has beaten them, has been the better team for the last 2 years playing them. And what we're seeing here is the Warriors being exposed as a pretty good team, but they can't keep up with the younger, athletic Grizzlies. Okay, that's one. The other way is, listen, Warriors played like crap over these last two games. Couldn't hit a freaking shot.
Yeah, they shot 18% from three.
And they still took back home court advantage.
Yeah.
And if you look at game two, it was a miracle. It took a superhuman performance from Ja Morant to win that game. And outside of Ja Morant, who do you count on for the Grizzlies? Like, can't count on Jaren. he comes and goes. Can't count on DeAnthony. He comes and goes. I'd like to say Desmond Bane, but he's got a bad back. Steven Adams is coming back from COVID. Who exactly do you count on? And it can Jod be superhuman every single game?
Right.
It was that second half, it kept looking like the Warriors were going to win, and then Jod did incredible, miraculous things. Well, is he going to be that Jod every game? Otherwise, the Warriors are the better team.
Yeah.
Which word in those? It's probably in the in-between. Where do you subscribe?
It's obviously somewhere in between. I will say, though, of everything you laid out that I agree with, it's what makes it makes the atmosphere heading into game three kind of consuming or kind of confusing, because on the one hand, after what you saw in game two, there should be kind of momentum heading into that game. Yet with the suspension, honestly, I think a huge part of this is the Desmond Bane injury, whatnot. You know, I think most people recognize if the Grizzlies are going to win this series, they have to have him, and he has to be hitting shots.
Yes.
And so it leads you to I guess they're still the underdogs, and, you know, I'm going to root like hell, but I don't know.
If they have that Desmond Bane, they're not going to win the series. Desmond Bane, it wasn't just that he missed shots.
Yes.
He did miss shots.
It was he looked bad and missed shots. He looked
And also, physically. There were times when he would get the pass, and you had known that if he were in the Minnesota series, it would have gone up immediately, and you would have felt like it was going to go in.
Yes.
This time he didn't shoot it.
Yes. I mean,
shots he did not shoot because his back was limiting him.
Yeah, I think there's two issues with Desmond right now. Number one, he's not making the shots, and then he's not making the shots while not looking great. And it's obvious to me that Desmond is the only person that the Warriors have not basically said, let him shoot. Like, they are making him work. And because they're making him work, it makes you feel worse because you realize, like, oh, he's not 100%.
He's just not 100%. So
with that said, I still think there is one key issue that they don't have an answer for. The best player in the series right now plays for Memphis.
Clearly.
Yeah, and they don't have an answer.
I personally am glad, and I would, you know, it's interesting how your recent experiences frame, you see this sure. with Dylan Brooks all the time. Like, there are still some people who are like, they're better off without Dylan Brooks because he shot badly recently, right?
Yes.
And because we saw Steven Adams recently not looking good, there are some who are like, I don't care that he's coming back. I'm particularly, as this series amps up, and as they go to San Francisco, to have a guy who has that kind of experience in the playoffs, even though it hasn't all been successful,
yeah.
It hasn't all been gravy for him, who has and who is as physical as anyone
yes.
in the league. He's a big man. He emanates a sense of calm. And by the way, I don't know if you've noticed this, but the Grizzlies have been out-rebounded each of the last two games. That does not seem like a recipe for success. So I fully expect Steven Adams, they say they're going to have him do another workout today and see how he feels, but I fully expect him not just to play, but to be back in the starting lineup. And I'm grateful for that, because I think as you try to withstand what will surely be a furious start for the Warriors, I'll be comforted to have the big man there.
I'm with you. I think the other aspect about Desmond Bane, or beg your pardon, the other aspect about Steven Adams is I think it could help out Desmond Bane in that when Steven's on the floor, it gives their offense more structure. It becomes less
And it helps Ja because he sets screens and
I think it makes it harder for the Warriors to be fake tough guys.
Yep, and that's true too. So I'm glad he's back. I fully expect the starting lineup. Obviously, it'll be Desmond provided health, and I assume he'll be healthy enough to start. It'll be Bane, Ja, Jaren, Steven Adams. And then I fully expect Zaire Williams to be the fifth to take Dylan's place. I'm not sure that's what I would do. What do I know? Like, you know, he Taylor Jenkins is the coach. I might think DeAnthony Melton, who has shown some signs of reappearing here in this series. Obviously, he was very good in game one and is critical defensively. But I expect Zaire Williams to get the start, don't you?
I think that's how I would pick it, because it seems like the choices are Zaire or Melton. But that would also mean if you're putting Melton there, does Desmond now move over to the three? And so
they're all going to play a bunch.
Right. But I think the most obvious answer is Zaire, who has played the three mostly this year, will just move in.
Well, and they also, that's exactly when Brooks was tossed in game two and you had to look up and see who was going to start the second half. It was Zaire.
Yes.
And so Zaire, I fully expect him to start. I feel very good about him going forward with this team as well. Don't you? Like, I
feel good. I'm not at the point, though, like, I know John's convinced he's going to be a stud.
No, John was balking the other day. John said he's got to be able to do something. He's got to develop a move to the basket other than just being a 3-and-D player. I was saying stud. John was like,
yeah.
Let me see something else from him. You're more in that line.
Yeah, I'm more in line with that. I mean, yes, I think when people want to do he defended Steph well. I mean, maybe.
No.
I think Steph just missed shots.
I think I'm just projecting as much as anything.
I've been nothing but encouraged.
It's projecting physically, and then. It's just like with my guy Josh Allen.
Yeah.
If you have physical tools and a commitment to being great,
yes.
And I sense that in him.
No,
it feels like he's
a serious dude. I think Rudy Gay had a serious commitment, but like in the end,
Rudy Gay had wanted to be a star. Rudy Gay more wanted to be a star.
I'm very encouraged by what I've seen from Zaire. I'm just not ready to say
right. He's going to be an all-star.
Bonafide stud.
Ready to say it all. Yeah. I'm very heartened by it.
I do not think it was a wasted pick.
Well, that's certainly true. We already know it was not a wasted pick. Anyway, fascinating stuff yesterday from the Grizzlies, and we get to wait one more day, and then they will play game three. We will talk to Jason Smith about it coming up, then Chris Harrington. We're going to try to catch him at the airport. And then we will take your calls. It is Mother's Day Sunday, and that means it's not too late to get into Oak Hall. They have a women's department there, you know. And I myself have at different points walked in. Normally I go to the men's department, and last night I had dinner with Peter and Andrew, my younger two are home. And Peter was saying, I need some more clothes because he's going to work in Washington, D.C. this summer. And so I'm going to take him and get him outfitted at Oak Hall so he looks sharp, because that's what they can do for you. Absolutely stunning, beautiful clothes, and incredibly helpful people. That's the other thing I do. I just hand Peter over to them, and they take care of him. But I have also then walked through the beautiful men's department, past the Peter Millar collection, past the Johnny O collection, past all the beautiful sport coats, the table of neckties, which is each one more glorious than the next, to the women's department. And I say, this is the circumstances. This is the thing. I need help every time they come through. So while you're in there, and then you can get something for yourself as well. It would be a great weekend to stop and see our friends at Oak Hall. When we come back, Jason Smith's going to join us. We'll do that next. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Jeff's guests appear on the Service Master by Cornerstone phone lines. The experts when it comes to disaster cleanup. Service Master by Cornerstone on 92.9 FM ESPN.
back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Joined now by Jason Smith. Jason and John, every single day from 11 until 2, it is appointment listening for me and for others across the region, including this week when they had Jay Williams in studio. Hey, Jason, how tall is Jay Williams?
I think he's 6'1", or listed 6'2", but it felt like he was.
Did he tower? Did he feel taller than you?
No. I was about to say, felt like he's only got an inch on me. I'm 5'11", 3/4". So, he's probably about 6'1", probably, I'd say.
Nice guy.
Oh, yeah. Really cool. You should have seen him afterwards, with the people out at Shoot 360, with the, he played against some kids, played against some teenagers, played against some adults, John Martin included.
Did he humiliate, hopefully, John Martin?
I that's what I was looking for, was a humiliation.
No.
And I'll be honest with you. I'm not just saying this because I got to do a radio show with him in 3 hours, and I'm hoping to complete it with him. He was fine. John actually, he held his own. Jay beat him, and Jay talked a little stuff. But they shot from three different lines, and John held his own. He lost, but it certainly wasn't an embarrassing performance like it was for me many years ago when I tried out for the G League team. So I thought John showed well.
John can shoot.
Yeah, that's the one thing he can do. Going to the basket, dribbling, all that. It's a little bit of a mess, but he can stand outside. He's got a decent looking jumper on him, so we don't want to blow his head up too much, Jeff. But yes, he held his own. We'll put it that way.
Before I get to
and Jay, great guy, nice guy.
And he's been through a lot of stuff, Jay has. The injury that ended his career, and then he had addiction issues after that, and now he's, now he's obviously carved out a fabulous career for himself. Anyway, I enjoy hearing him every single week on your show. That is a coup.
Before, we're lucky to have him.
Before I get to the Grizzlies, Tyler Harris visiting USF. Your thoughts. It is sort of funny. They're going to end up playing Landers Nolly. They're going to end up playing Tyler. If this is the way it works out, your thoughts on Tyler looking at USF?
I love it. I've seen Brian Gregory really wants him down there. Now, we had this conversation on. I reported on our show that he's going to make a visit down there this week, and we'd had this conversation on our show about, South Florida, its tournament chances, all that. And what you'd probably think right now, pretty slim. And Brian Gregory is certainly on a hot seat, but he's let Tyler know that my point guard last year led us in shot attempts, and I see essentially the same thing for you. So here's the point. He wants him. He's got minutes promised. And for Tyler Harris, who's got one more year, right, and you want to get all your shots out because who knows if you're going to play as a professional, that's where you want to go. Jacksonville, Jordan Mincy, the Memphian, former Ridgeway High standout. He'll be in his second year at Jacksonville. He wants him too. Jacksonville last year was a win away from making the NCAA tournament out of its conference. And so, anyway, the great thing for Tyler is he's wanted. And here's a deal where it didn't occur to us till we were talking about it this week. But I said it. Listen, what for a guy who did not get his senior day right, a senior day where I'm sure there would have been monstrous applause for him down at FedEx Forum. Alo ends up being the only one that walks. At that point, Tyler Harris thinking, I'm coming back. I'm going to get it next year. Hey, he comes with South Florida. He'll get a day. I'm not saying pick South Florida because of this, but think about the great storyline it would be for Tyler to sort of get that love coming back in there. Remember KJ Lawson and the terms he left on and what it was like for him when he came back with Tulane, how he got booed. Penny had to tell people that's the wrong thing to do. It'd be the entire opposite, I feel like, with Tyler, different situations, but again, a guy coming back as an opponent, obviously he would be showered, right? With everyone knowing too, in this case, that it wasn't Tyler saying, "Hey, I'm going to go find somewhere else to play better than Memphis." Now, this is a case where, in this case, he was asked to leave, go somewhere where you're going to find some minutes because I'm changing directions. That's obviously Penny Hardaway, and for Tyler, just like the Nolly conversation we had, Jeff, if you're asked to leave, you can't be mad at where they go. And in this case, you get a nice silver lining that maybe comes back to the Forum, and it's a nice sort of senior day appreciation for him when he's introduced, if he indeed picks South Florida. And Lord knows they got the minutes to offer him, so we'll see how it goes.
You obviously know this story and have been breaking stuff on this story more than anyone. Do you get the sense that there's, we saw Tyler said it wasn't his choice, and his mom – you know, was pretty outspoken on social media as well. Is there hard feelings here? And I ask partly because it's funny. I got a direct message from someone this week who said, "How come you all don't? No one reports on the dysfunction over at Memphis and the turnover and the players who are all unhappy and leaving and the coaches who are unhappy and leaving."
Oh,
and,
my goodness.
And I said, yeah. And I wrote back and I said, listen, if first of all, we hear from lots of players who just, you know, like Jalen Duren volunteers how happy he is, right? Like,
right.
If anyone, to be clear, if anyone wanted to be quoted about unhappiness, whether it's an assistant coach or a player under Penny Hardaway, we would publish that if someone wanted to. I honestly don't get the sense that what happened with Tyler, like, that's what happens in college basketball. You distribute minutes, and if you're not going to play someone, you say, listen, better you go somewhere else. But I don't know, what's the level of hard feelings here? Is there hard feelings, or what's your sense of it?
I mean, my sense of it is that the family obviously was hurt by the decision.
Right.
I mean, clearly they 100%. Were. I'm sure at one point, too, Jeff, and I heard this directly from them because the situation changed so quickly, but I'm sure at one point after you lead the team in scoring eight times, you know, you're big, you have your season high against Tulsa in a game that frankly turned around the season. I think, Jeff, at one point you're expecting to be on scholarship, you know, your final right. year. And so to get the news – right, a phone call that you're, you know, hey, I'm going to go a different direction, that kind of thing. And listen, we know that they plan to be back because, again, Tyler wasn't a guy that walked on senior day. If you'd known you were out of here, you'd have done it with Alex Lomax, and Tyler were suddenly deserving of that, especially with as big a part of the team as he was last year. But it wasn't just that. Every year that Tyler was here, he was an important piece, and he was a guy that did what you asked. And so, of course, there were hurt feelings initially. I think what has impressed me most, Jeff, I hope I could be like that in that situation, is that family's got, you know, with those kinds of feelings, right? With initially, at least his father, who made it very public that he, you know, thought Tyler should, hey, pick Baylor. You know, they got a more of a minutes promise. Who initially was hesitant about his son picking Memphis. You know what they've done? They've done what us media folks say parents should do. Let the kid, in this case, the young man, make the decision. Even with you got your own strong feelings, right? I mean, John tells us all the time, we laugh about it, his daughter's not going to Tennessee, no matter what, no matter what they offer. In this case, father, in this case, you know, mom, even with some hurt feelings, I'm sure, they step to the side and they let Tyler do what he wanted to do. And here, in this case, he comes back, everything else, he gets pushed back out. Nobody's blasting Penny or the program. Those folks have lived in Memphis their entire lives. I mean, again, with hurt feelings. Me, I might let folks know how much I'm hurting. I might say, like, my kid got done wrong. He got called over the phone. They're not doing that. They realize how much that program meant to their son. They realize how much that program has meant to Memphis. And they've sort of stepped to the side, right, and allowed this to play out without being critical, you know, without being public about anything. And don't we always say, man, that's, you know, they should, you know, you're supposed to support your kid and let them make the decisions. I mean, that's all they've done the entire way through. Sometimes, you know, even when they've thought he should make a different one. And so I hope I'm that, you know, that willing to, you know, see my son in this case, you could say, I suppose in this case, say, I mean, because it is pushed out, and yet willing to say, you know what, we'll find another place. We graduate from Memphis tomorrow on Saturday. Our son enjoyed his time there, and we wish the best for Memphis, but most importantly, we're going to support our son. I mean, that's, you know, that's some strength, man. That's some inner strength. It really is.
And he will always be a Tiger.
I go back to Tubby Smith, who said kids didn't want to grow up being Tigers. He realized at the end of it he was wrong. Tyler Harris grew up wanting to be a Tiger, and it was so evident that kid, he knew immediately, almost like you come back from Iowa State, hey, I made a mistake, I'm willing to take a walk-on spot. I mean, Tyler Harris wanted to be a Tiger, and it's just evidence that kids still grow up wanting to be one.
And he'll be embraced as one for all time. All right, onward to the Grizzlies. I take it you were not surprised by the suspension of Dylan Brooks, and onward we go, right? I mean, you try to survive game three without him, and then game four will be wild.
Yeah, I mean, I mean that's I, Memphis has more options, right? You saw Zaire start the second half, and no, Zaire's not some lockdown defender. He's a rookie. He's got all kinds of defensive lapses, still does. But in terms of young legs, hey, you could have worse options in terms of putting him on Steph and just having him run Steph around as much running as Steph does off the ball. Just go chase him. It's what Dylan Brooks does best. So now Zaire's in that spot. DeAnthony's in that spot. Again, you're in a much better position with options as opposed to Golden State, who goes into game three saying, who in the heck are we going to put on Ja Morant? Gary Payton II, we don't have him anymore. He literally cut up every player we threw at him there in clutch time over the last 5 minutes of that game. Iguodala won't be available, at least according to Kendra Andrews, for another week. What does Golden State do? Because I tell you this, if you got to put Steph and Klay on Ja, right, and Ja decides to be Mr. Aggressive like he was in game two, well, then they're having to work on the defensive end in maybe a way, obviously, that they hope they wouldn't have to. What they'd like to concentrate on right now is being comfortable, getting back to knocking down the threes that they usually hit. But if they've got to add to a defensive assignment, right, more of what they've got to do defensively is guard Ja, dude, that's a good sign for the Grizzlies. So listen, with the Golden State Warriors still being a significant favorite to win this series, even though if you look at ESPN's BPI, you know, I know it's two different things, but they've actually got the Grizzlies favored at this point. You have to feel good about where the Grizzlies are, even with Dylan Brooks out, and oh, yeah, here come some reinforcements with a guy by the name of Steven Adams, who you think possibly could change the tone of things, and certainly inside where you've been getting beat on the boards. That's a guy, you know, sets the offensive rebound record for your franchise, can help you on the defensive end, needs to help you on the defensive end because Wiggins and Porter are killing you. And so, Jeff, I say bring in Steven Adams. There's an opportunity for you to sort of set a different tone, maybe a tone that Golden State can't stop as you know, this shit thing shifts back to San Francisco. It's fun, Jeff, and there's just a bunch of reasons why, you know, even with me picking Golden State in this series, you still feel good about the Grizzlies' chances, and hell, I want to be all the way wrong. It'd be great to see the Grizzlies advance through this, and I think they can. If they've got that Ja Morant, right, and Bane can hit a couple, and you got Steven Adams, and you're changing the tone inside, there's every reason to believe the Grizzlies can win this series.
Do you feel it is interesting that here the Warriors came in and they took away home court advantage from the Grizzlies, yep. But I get the sense that you feel better about the Grizzlies' chances of winning the series now than you did when they had home court advantage before the series began. Yes?
Yes, and part of that is seeing Ja do what he has done this first two games, right? Because it wasn't until game five, end of third quarter, that you see a Ja Morant that is taking over. Right, essentially. It wasn't until then that we knew, because then we were, is he hurt? Is he not? Is he saving up? Not, oh, yes, he got, no, he's not hurt. We were doing all that. You've seen now, this guy, whether he was saving it or whatever else, he can do it is the point. So you feel much better about that, and the fact that Golden State's lost Gary Payton II. You know, the guy that at least they picked out as their best option to guard him, so much so that you're willing to start him and sit a guy in Jordan Poole that can go off. And so that's the point. I mean, they've got, the Grizzlies have more options in terms of the adjustments to make than Golden State's got right now. So, yes, since this series has started with those factors, yeah, I feel better about it going in. I'm not going to run away from my pick here. I'll stick to it, and I'll hold up my hand and say I was wrong if the Grizzlies win this series. But, yeah, man, I think I feel a lot better about it having played two games now than I did starting, because, remember, Golden State rolled Denver, and you struggled with a Minnesota team that, frankly, was trying to be you. And so coming into it, you felt one way, and I think it's fair to feel certainly more confident, and I'm certainly, you know, I'm probably going to be telling myself I should have been on the bandwagon with these Grizz folks that had picked from the beginning by the time this thing's done, especially, Jeff, if Steven Adams can come in and be effective. You are not trying to guard Karl Anthony Towns on the other end, so, you know, there's a possibility here you can sort of get back to what you do.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's funny.
It
like,
really is.
Like you, I was – so before the playoffs began, I said that the Grizzlies would wind up losing to Phoenix in the Western Conference Finals. That's what I said before the playoffs began. Having seen the first round of the playoffs,
yep,
I confess, Grizzlies didn't look great against Minnesota. Warriors look pretty damn good.
Mm-hmm.
So then I revised my estimate I can constantly, you know, I'm like Mel Kiper with his mock drafts. So then I put together my mock prediction 2, and it was Grizzlies losing to the Warriors. Now I really think it's about Desmond Bane. If Desmond Bane is healthy, I think the Grizzlies win.
Man.
You know? Yeah.
Can he just flip the switch like Jock? Can you tell it back? You know, now you're not hurting. I was listening to you guys the other day. We were listening to Jeffrey. About sometimes you go out to the, you know, sometimes you go out for a round of golf and that back's feeling a little bit better than you thought it would. He was so stiff. You know, I hope these days off have helped him out. And I tell you what, just him being out there though, with the way they've had to guard him, it helps. But man, it would be nice if he could knock down a few. I doubt we'll get the Bane we got to start the playoffs, but. I'll take a 50% Desmond Bane if he can knock down a few. Take more than 5 shots, you know. Was it 5 or 7? Whatever it was too few.
So as a husband, how is Mother's Day shaping up for you? Do you feel great responsibility?
Well, it's like being a air traffic controller because I got one mom, my wife, going out of here up to New York, and I got my mom coming in. We're talking about Memphis graduation tomorrow for Tyler Harris, Landers Nolly, and many others. My niece. Will become the 3rd Memphis graduate in the family, joining myself and my mom tomorrow. She's graduating from down at FedEx Forum. Yeah. So my mom is coming in. We've got to take care of my mom. And then when Faith, my wife, mom to love to Christopher, gets back home on Sunday, we've obviously got to take her out as well. So, it's just trying to get folks in and out and make sure the moms are all happy and gifts are in their hands. Just a little bit of that. Got to take care of all the moms, Jeff, as you know.
Thank you, Jason. Appreciate it. I'll be listening at 11 o'clock.
Have a great weekend.
Yep.
Safe travels.
There are, of course, a lot of different kinds of moms. There are working moms. There are stay-at-home moms. There are stepmoms, grandmoms. There are pet moms. And it is now Friday. So it's time to start thinking about it. It's time to start thinking about what you're going to do. And I got the answer for you. And it is Robert Irwin Jewelers. Bigger, brighter diamonds will make any mother happy. I'll start with the pet mom. They got a diamond paw necklace, only $119. That's cute. If you want a mom and child diamond heart necklace features a silhouette of a mom cradling her baby inside of a heart, highlighted with several sparkling round diamonds. That starts at only $89. They've got a 1/4-carat diamond hoop earrings, $399. Go in, make some mom happy. This is a hard job being a mom, you know, and this is their day. And every day should be their day, but this is their day. And so go to any of the convenient locations. I go to the one on Perkins Extended right across from Novel. Bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices. Check them out at rijewelers.com. I do want to call your attention, Jeffrey, and I may get to this later. Did you see that a motorist crashed into the half shell?
Yes, so I read the column today.
Yeah. So last week, I think it was, a motorist, this is the headline, motorist crashes into the half shell. And the motorist is Dan Conaway, it turns out. Dan Conaway, of course, longtime advertising wizard in Memphis, and he now writes a column in the Daily Memphian. Now, if you crashed into a notable Memphis restaurant, would you reveal yourself? Or would you just hope no one noticed? The worst thing is, by the way, one of the headlines said elderly motorist.
Yes.
Takes out the half shell. This is what he says. I had some takeout at the half shell on Mendenhall. I took out the corner of the restaurant with a Subaru completely, spectacularly. I made the left turn into the parking lot, successfully navigating between the roughly 700 cars that had just passed me headed for Poplar and the roughly 700 oncoming cars, and then headed for the available handicap parking space. Princess, yes, I have a tag. As I turned into it, and 5 feet before the brick column at the end of it, my foot slipped off the brake and hit the side of the accelerator. To avoid the column, I jerked the steering wheel right and ran right into the corner of the building and the awning and the railing and awning supports and a couple of other cars. All of a sudden, the half shell was serving Subaru coming in hot. And that comes with a couple of parked cars on the side, served a la dented. I don't recommend it. The check is enormous. Would you have revealed yourself?
Absolutely. Everything's content.
What he went on to say was that people poured out of the half shell, customers, servers, kitchen staff, management. As Nora and I sat in the car stunned, and God bless Nora, that's his wife. She was taken along for quite the ride. People rushed to help. No one was concerned about the restaurant or their interrupted meals or the other cars or their lost business or their tips or the future of any of those things. That concern would follow. But their concern at the moment to a person was getting us out of that car safely and the well-being after we were out. And went on to talk about the firemen, the policemen, all of that who came to help. We had crashed into the half shell and closed it, but the half shell put iced tea in our shaking hands and sent us home with salads and wouldn't let us pay for that. We didn't know any of them when we hit the building. We knew all of them when we left. All of that is so Memphis. We understand the challenge and adversity, and we have heart, enormous heart. The next morning, Danny Summerall, owner of the half shell, called and introduced himself. He just wanted to see if we were all right. We talked about all the people we knew in common. The list was long. Laughter was involved. He didn't want to talk about liability or insurance. He told me my insurance guy had already been by and had taken care of that. And on and on and on. He then brings up Morant too, basically. It's a column celebrating Memphis and the heart of Memphis. And I will tweet it out here in a moment if you want to see the full story. But Dan Conaway ran into the half shell and lived to write about it over at the Daily Memphian. All right, we're gonna take a break. We're gonna talk to Chris Harrington when we return, and then we will talk to y'all. It's Jeff Dawkins Show on a Friday, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.